Blog Talk Radio. Happy Sunday, Labor Day weekend Sunday. Welcome to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Network. I am Lisa Tarvis, your host. I am a metaphysician, a board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, and an author of the book Just Believe, and, of course, a radio host as well. Every Sunday, the show is on at 1 p.m. Eastern. And we have lots of great guests on in different who are experts in the fields of holistic health, spirituality, metaphysics, paranormal, you know, that kind of stuff. And if you are an expert in one of those fields or know of an expert in one of those fields that would like to be on the show, you can send me an email at lisa@lisatarvis.com. So we're going to have a really positive, upbeat, happy show today. We have two great guests on today, and we're going to basically talk about how to just live your life a little bit more in a more happy way, and by getting rid of negativity. One of the basics of holistic health is basically learning how to shut off changing your thought patterns so that the negative thought patterns go away, and we bring up positive thought patterns. We only allow them in, and it's not an easy exercise. It takes time, and that's what we're going to talk about. The ways that you make that happen. It's not you don't just wake up one morning and decide, okay, I'm going to be positive for the rest of my life. It's great to wake up and say that, but I don't think that it's realistic to just think that that's going to magically happen. It actually does take some work, and that's what we're going to be focusing on today. My first guest is Sally Marks, and Sally Marks is, I'll read her bio for everyone, and then I'll get her on the air with us. She wrote a book called Erase Negativity. And it's the perfect opening to the show today. So Sally Marks is a public relations professional, personal life coach, motivational speaker, and an award-winning journalist. Her articles have been published in national, regional, and local newspapers and magazines that range from the International Living Buddhism magazine to Arizona's popular Phoenix Home and Garden. Her screenplays, The Air, Voices from Hell, and Gay for a Day have won 5 awards and placed in 2 national contests and 1 international competition. Erase Negativity is her first self-help, self-improvement book. So I'm going to bring Sally on so she can talk to us a little bit about this book. Sally, are you there?
I am, Lisa.
Great. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited about this. This is like one of my pet peeves, right, I guess, about life. And it's one of the things I'm really good at preaching to other people about and really bad at walking this talk a little bit. It's not easy, is it? It's not something that is just so simple that, oh, okay, I'm just not going to be negative anymore. It actually does take some work.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think that understanding something and doing it are two different things. But at least thinking about it is a start.
Yeah, I think that in your book, and I have lots of questions for you, but in your book, are there exercises you recommend people do? Or, I mean, like, I mean, is it, it how do you just, people ask me this all the time, and I say it's one thought at a time. You know, the second the negative thought comes in, turn it around, make it somehow find something positive to think instead. You know, is it? Do you think that that's the way it works? It's kind of like one actual thought at a time.
Yes, that's really all you can do is one thought or action at a time, and it starts that simple. But then the point is, of course, you build on it from there. And your earlier question about do we have tips in the book? Yes, we do. We have 11 chapters. And in those chapters, each one is a story, a true story, about someone that we interviewed who had negative or very unhappy things in their lives, or certainly difficult things, and how they overcame them. And these people are very unique. They run everywhere from, you know, drug addicts, alcoholics, to multimillionaires. But we wanted something that reflected really a great cross-section of people. But then at the end of each chapter, very simple tips that anybody could do. We didn't want to make it complicated, but we wanted each chapter to show someone who had done it so people wouldn't just think we were just preaching at them. We actually showed them, you know, through the book, my co-author Jackie and I, and then how the person reading the book can turn it around, because we thought that was a good formula.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's so, you know, when people ask me about it, because it is, I think it is one of the basics of holistic health, is basically, you know, thinking that your thoughts and your emotions can control your health, you know, your physical health. And so in order to stay healthy, you know, I always tell my clients, you really need to think differently. You need to, when those, you know, negative thoughts, I mean, oh gosh, I mean, you look in the mirror and you're like, even just handling a compliment, you know, somebody says, oh my gosh, you know, you look great. And you sit there and you're like, really? You know, and all you do is have this, like, this negative thing going through you. And then they're looking at you like, you know, wow, you really don't know how to take a compliment. But it's like, it's everything. And then we just like completely overthink, you know? We think too much. I always tell everybody we think too much. I think that this, we just all think too much. But I want to ask you a lot of questions about this topic and about the book. First thing, I guess, the best question to start with is, you know, with your history, with what we read in your bio, with the things you've done in the past, what made you write this book?
You know, it's interesting because I have my friend and my co-author, Jackie, and I are very interested in metaphysical topics and self-improvement, and we were chatting on the phone about the different books that had helped us. And then the conversation shifted to people we knew who were in, you know, terrible emotional pain and very negative because of it. And we wondered, what would it take for someone like that? And we brainstormed and thought, well, what they need is some sort of a primer or read this book first that could help them erase their negativity. And then once they were no longer entrenched in that negativity, they could go on and enjoy the optimistic messages in other books. But our thought was that if the person doesn't erase their negativity, any optimistic front would just fall apart. It's kind of like treating the symptoms instead of the illness. And so we didn't really plan on writing a book, but after that conversation, we felt compelled to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good because I think it's something that's going to help a lot of people. And, you know, and that's important. So had either one of you ever thought about writing something like this, like a self-help book, before you had your conversation about, you know, that you just told us about? Had it ever come up as, you know, something you talked about before?
You know, it's kind of funny because Jackie, my co-author, is an intuitive, and she had several psychics that were her friends tell her that she would write a great book. And she's an avid reader but doesn't enjoy writing very much. It's hard for me to even squeak an email out of her, so the idea of her writing a book was preposterous, she used to think.
Right.
But they said, oh, you'll work with someone else, a writer. And she goes, maybe, you know, but she really didn't think so until we started brainstorming about it. And then for me, I, at least I'm a writer, so that wasn't as implausible. But I thought, I don't want to write a self-help book. I don't want to write comedy. That's what I really thought I was going to do. And I was in the middle of rewriting one of my romantic screenplays, Gay for a Day. And I thought that's where I was going to go. But after that conversation with Jackie on the phone, we just, we both felt electric. You know, that moment where you get goosebumps, you say something,
yeah,
and it's all of a sudden it's like, boom. And we both felt it at the exact same time. And we thought, you know, not that just this book has to be written, but it needed to be written by us. So it really was, you know, one of those magic moments. And so I guess the short answer is no, we really, but sometimes you just feel compelled to do something from a higher power, and that's how it happened with us.
Yeah, and I think that when you do that, I mean, you know, if you're just touching, you know, one or two lives and somebody gets something out of it, I mean, you've done such a great service, you know, by writing it. And people don't realize how much work it is, you know, to write a book. It takes a lot of work to actually get a book written. And so, you know, it's just, to me, the reward, and no, believe it or not, unless you wrote 50 Shades of Grey or something like that, nobody's getting rich off these books. I mean, you know, none of us are getting rich from writing these books. People have this crazy thought, but that, you know, that, oh my gosh, you wrote a book, you must be wealthy. No, not really. It's not the way it works. In fact, when my royalty checks come in, sometimes it's actually embarrassing, and I wish they just would have kept it. Because it's like, really? you really needed to mail this to me? But, you know, so it's like, it's not, I mean, you know, you do make money from writing a book, but you don't make a lot of money from it, like I said, unless you've written some amazing, you know, bestseller. But, you know, the point for me was always to be able to just, I don't know, to just think, wow, you know, you're leaving a legacy behind you. You're leaving some of your beliefs, you know, some of the things that you truly believe in, written in a format where people long after you're gone will be able to still read that book, you know, if they choose to. So I think it's really great that you took on something like this, because you know, it's an important topic, and if we could all just get out of this negative self-talk that we do, we would be in a lot better shape. I want to offer our readers, by the way, our listeners, if anybody wants to call in and ask any questions, you can call, or if you have a comment, you can, a nice comment, no hecklers. You know, every once in a while you get one of those crazy people. None of you. But the call-in number is 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. And press 1, and I'll see you in the queue, and we'll get to you when there's an appropriate moment in the show. I know it's Labor Day weekend. Everybody's probably on the beach listening to the show, so that's okay. It's all right. You don't have to call in if you've got the ocean sound in the background, because I'm just going to be jealous. So Sally, do you think people get more negative as they get older? You know, more jaded as they get older?
I think it depends on the person, and if you let transient qualities such as a youthful face or a shapely figure define you, then it makes sense. You're going to be more depressed as you age and your body ages and you change. And I always tell people depression and negativity are best buddies, but I do believe it depends on the person. I know that in some ways I am more positive as I've aged, but I know a lot of other people that have become very jaded because of the things that have happened, or not so much what's happened to their life, but how they've let their attitude affect what happened to them in their life.
Right.
So I think that's the big key. You know, it's, you know, you can make lemonade out of lemons type of thing. But it really does. You have that choice. And again, that's one of the reasons Jackie and I wrote the book, because these were people that had some pretty horrific, some of them had horrible things happen and turned it around. So, you know, I think it's a choice. As you age, yes, you can either become more negative or you can become more positive. But the big deal is the choice is yours and the steps you take are yours. But, yeah, certainly I'm not excited about aging. I've never met anybody, I don't care how positive they are, that says, "Whoa, another wrinkle, another gray hair. Oh, look at this pot belly. I am so excited." You know, no, that just doesn't happen. But I have heard a lot of people say they're more comfortable in their skin. They like their attitude, that they've developed more. So I guess the answer in a nutshell is it depends on your attitude.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, and I think that, you know, the attitude is such just a huge part of it. And I think for me, as I'm getting older, I'm 47, and you know, I have three teenagers, 15, almost 19, and almost 20, and I sit there and I'm like, what the heck? Just how did that go so fast? I feel like I just was pregnant like a week ago. And it's like, and you sit there and you start thinking, but would I want to redo my 20s? Would I want to redo my teens? Hell no.
Right. Right.
You know, those were hard. They're hard in a different way, you know, but they're hard. They're hard years. So, you know, I wouldn't want to go back and, you know, maybe knowing what I know now, but even that, I mean, I don't want to go through all that again. It's like you have to enjoy being in the moment, you know, being in the moment that you're in, which, you know, is right now. So I think that's so important. What do you think, you know, with the people that you interviewed in your book, did they have similar lifestyles? Were they all women, all men, or what was the base you were working with there?
I really had diversity as a key. I interviewed men and women from different backgrounds, income levels, ethnicities, and religions. I think the youngest person was 40, the oldest person was 84. But I wanted as much diversity as possible, because our goal was, you know, maybe not every one of the 11 chapters would hit the nail on the head for the reader, but at least one, probably more than one, would hit. So, yeah,
right.
Poor people, millionaires. I mean, we really, it was quite a diverse group of folks.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Like, when you talk about you know, poor being, you know, a lot of people believe that, you know, all I've got to do, if I had $1 million, I could be happy. And that's, it's funny how, I mean, I'm assuming you found that was not true.
Well, even prior to interviewing the people in the book, I already knew that wasn't true from based on different people I've met in my life. But the richness in life and happiness does not come with a, you know, a dollar sign. And although all of us think that probably we would be happier if we just had more money. And that may or may not happen, but you can take steps with your attitude and be so much happier that really the money is not always the key question. One of the most wealthy people I ever met committed suicide. So you really don't know, and I'm not saying I wouldn't like to have more money. I think most people would, but it's not going to be what makes a person happy. And just not having a lot of money is not something stopping you from being happy either. I think some of the happiest people I know are poor, are, you know, what we would consider poor, meaning they don't make a lot of income, but rich in other things, family, connection, friends. So I just think people just need to stop thinking about the money as the happiness and just go for the happiness. It's like going to the store. You already have, you know, the perfect, you know, blouse or shoes or whatever it is that you're looking for, then, you know, why go shopping for something else? It's, you already have it. Just use it. But it's tough, especially in this, you know, society where we put so much emphasis on money.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it's a huge misconception, you know, that people think that money makes you happy, or maybe they think, well, for them it would make them happy. Maybe it doesn't make everybody else happy, but it would make them happy. And you know what? I've always found the more money you make, the more money you spend, and the bigger the house, and the nicer, the more expensive the cars, and so your bills just grow with the income. So like, I don't know that you ever get to a point, that there are many of us that ever get to a point in life that we don't worry about money. You know, it's not the make and break of everything. So what the next thing I wanted to ask you was, what are some of the most common patterns in developing negativity? Where does it come from?
You know, Jackie and I, when we started out with this book, we took the stance that most negativity is learned. You know, it's a learned behavior. People have different reasons for becoming the way they are, but it boils down to the choices that, you know, you make every day. And I've interviewed people who had tragic lives and overcome their negativity, and people who've had a blessed life, and they were profoundly negative. So the big question is, do you want to be happy or use excuses to stay similar to miserable? You know, it sounds harsh, but that's the truth. So really, it's the mindset, the choice, and it all goes back to a choice. You know, people say, well, it's a thought or an action, but really, and even I say that, but it's really a choice. What are you going to do with that thought, that speech, that action? Because there's always more than one choice. And once you get to where you pattern yourself in a positive way instead of a negative way. So, I mean, there are some, you know, sociopaths that probably are horrifically negative, but that's really the exception. We believe most negativity is learned because of the environment or because of our family unit or whatever. It's learned. But the good thing
you're talking about people that are chronically negative, I would guess. I mean, it's common for you to be negative or sad or whatever sometimes. I mean, we all have that, right? I mean, it's not, I just can't imagine that, you know, that there's not at some point, someday, you just wake up in a bad mood, or you have, you know, fighting your way through traffic, and then you get a flat tire, and then you finally get to work and your boss yells at you or something, you know, and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, overwhelmed, you know, with it. So what you're focusing on in the book is more of a chronic negative thinker.
Well, that's how it ends up. But it starts with, you know, the first, just like anybody, you know, when we're born into this world, it starts with one thing, and then it can snowball. And the bad thing is that once you go down a negative path, and of course now scientists are discovering this with the patterns in our brain and how our neurons are, it's like little pathways that then you start to expect, like in the day that you just described, you know, you start out in your bad mood, you spill your coffee, you get caught in traffic. And so it gets to the point where you expect the next bad thing that's going to happen. And
right.
And then it comes to you and you're already, and then you wire yourself for it. And then you tell people about it. You know, you make it worse. You'll say, you go to your best friend at work or something and say, oh man, you can't believe I did this. You know, and that happened, and you know, what's the next shoe gonna drop? And so it builds. You know, the bad things already happened, but then you relive it, and you retell it, and you rethink it, and you refeel it, and so even long after it's gone, it's like this bad, bad movie in your head.
Yeah.
And the thing is when you think it and feel it, you are really recreating it. And your body doesn't know the difference, and your neurons in your brain don't know the difference. So the thing is to kind of take a detour as soon as possible and put it into, you know, a different pattern. Or in my case, I like to write comedy. So really comedy and tragedy are very similar if you ever think about it. And so I try to turn it into a funny story, and then it kind of loses its power. instead of, oh, woe is me, and then laugh. That, I mean, that can be something, you know, that a person can do too. Like, oh, you know, this sucks, but oh, well, hey, you know, tomorrow's going to be a better day. And, but yes, I think that that is, it's a pattern. And then people slowly, if they don't do something to unravel it, it becomes a lifestyle.
Yeah, and then, I mean, again, getting back to the metaphysical side of things, if you're developing that pattern, then you're actually developing basically you're asking bad things to happen to you in a way, because you become a magnet for you know, if all you're doing is talking the sad poor me thing, then that's what you're going to get is more, you know, negative, bad stuff. And, you know, and I would imagine that that's a lot of the reason why people that start out with the negative day, and like you said, you go and you share it with people. And I don't know why we do that.
Hello?
So 1 second. I'm going to see if I can get Sally to call back in here. We were in the middle of talking, and we were having a great talk, and the whole show crashed. So let's the lovely live radio for you. It happens sometimes. But we were talking with Sally Marks, and she wrote the book Erase Negativity. And we were having a great conversation, and I lost her, and I lost the show, actually, completely, which has never happened before. That was a new boo-boo, a new error. So let me just see if I can find her somehow here. I don't really know how, but I'm going to see if there's a way to reconnect her. Again, Sally, if you're out there, if you can call into the show, 347-945-7246 and press 1, that would be awesome. And I'm going to try and see if I can find a way to track her down. And hold on, everybody just hang in there with me for a minute. Here she is, I think. Hold on. Sally, are you back with me?
I am. I'm sorry. I had your phone number on the computer, and I had turned it off, so I had to restart everything.
The entire show just went down. It just ended. The episode just was over. I'm like, what? And I was talking for like 5 minutes, I think, before I even realized it happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Typical.
And that's so funny, because the last thing I heard you say was, and I don't, you know, somehow we repeat negative things. She goes, and I don't know why we do that, and then boom.
Like, yes, I give up. That's right. That was really, really, really strange. It's never happened. I don't even know what caused that. But it actually was through the radio. I mean, something through the station, because everything else stayed connected. But it just took that down. Anyway, all right. So one little problem, one little glitch. Okay, so the show went away, you know. I'll have to edit now. See, now I'm going to have to edit the show so that when people listen, they don't have all that, like, okay, what just happened? All right. So what I wanted to ask you, the next question that I was getting towards, and I had a lot of very, of course, profound things that I said that nobody got to hear, but that's okay.
Of course.
They were deep and profound, but, you know, I can't redo that. Anyway, you know, you only have so many moments of, like, incredibleness. Anyway, so if you have, say, your spouse is kind of a grouchy person, or you have a friend that's always negative, always a naysayer, always, you know, how do you get someone else to fix that? I mean, we can fix ourselves to some degree, you know. I think we can fix ourselves completely, but, you know, everybody always says you can't change someone else. You can't fix someone else. But how do you – are there ways to try and help people get, like, through their negativity to maybe recognize it and start working on it?
Well, you know, I always tell people buy a bunch of copies of my book, and I'll give you a discount if you buy two more books.
Good advice, Sally.
But really, you're right. The bottom line is you can't change someone else. And what I suggest is just be your own good role model first. And, you know, and there's no law that says you have to handcuff yourself to a negative person. You can walk away or get off the phone. You don't have to tiptoe through a toxic waste dump of negativity.
Right.
And
right.
That's some of it. And you know, it's kind of interesting that as a person becomes more positive and works on themselves, they'll find that a lot of the negative people will just kind of move away. It's almost like you're on a different vibration. You know how you take a magnet and on the one side it attracts and it sticks together, and on the other one it kind of pushes away. And I'm not saying that happens every single time for every single person, but little by little. Also, sometimes as you develop your own more positive outlook, you know, people that are actually seeking to become better might ask you, like, well, how do you stay so positive? But in some cases, you have to really cut off some really toxic, if you can. It's one thing if it's your boss, but
right.
A lot of us have a choice again. And do I really want to call this friend or relative or whomever that is just so toxic? The other thing is if you can gently say something and not preach, I think the bottom line is if you truly care about someone and you communicate with them from a place of compassion, not superiority, not anger, you know, arrogance.
Not judgment, not a judging place, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
And it's hard to do. I remember a personal example I had before my dad passed away. He had a very sarcastic sense of humor, and he was a good person, but he always liked to laugh kind of at the expense of making someone else look bad. And I told him one day in a very compassionate way, Dad, your humor is hurtful. And nobody had ever said that to him, but because I wasn't being judgmental, I was just making a compassionate observation, he really stopped. I mean, nobody had ever said that to him. And he thought, and I can't say that he changed overnight, but it was a thought that he thought he was being funny and that everybody likes a joke, when really, if the joke's on you, it's not funny. And I think it was a life-changing moment, at least in his psyche. But the bottom line is for us to come from a place of compassion. And because people feel your intent.
Right.
And so that would be one. And the other is if they're just really so nasty, sometimes you just have to avoid them.
Well, you know, I know, like, my family, when we get together, it's a family of, you know, we're all poking at each other, you know, everybody's the butt of somebody else's joke, you know, and it used to be funny, and I've noticed over the years that it's getting really, really old, and now we're, you know, and I've brought it up a few times. I'm like, you know what, can we just have a dinner where we're not all, I mean, I know we're doing it out of fun. But it becomes hurtful, you know. It becomes hard. So, you know, I think that's important that, you know, like what you did with your dad, to just, you know, it's not always funny to the person that is the one that's getting beat up on. You know, it's not fun for them, and you can only be a good sport for so long. You know, to until you're just like enough. You know.
No, I think you might be related to me. sound very similar. And what's ironic is that sometimes who you were, like maybe with your siblings, you know, you were the one with the boogers in your nose or whatever you did.
Yeah.
You're not that person anymore, but yet they keep making you relive that. My little sister had the role, unfairly, but is kind of the ditz, the not too bright. She's actually very smart, but when the family gets together, it doesn't matter what she's done with her life since then. And her two kids are lawyers. I mean, she raised two brilliant kids, and she's brilliant herself, but they, you know, they'll still go back and tell these old, goofy, embarrassing stories like she's still that same person. And
right.
You get old, and until you finally take a, you know, stand and say, you know, can we talk about something in the present, and, you know,
yeah.
and And it's a hard conversation to have. It really is. I'm not saying that it's easy. But the other thing, what's less easy, is to keep listening to it and letting it hurt people over and over. Because sometimes those oldest hurts and mistakes, it's just like scraping off a scab. You think you're healed. And so sometimes it takes a brave, a courageous person to speak the truth.
Yeah,
but it'd
I
be better for everybody.
I think so, too. I mean, I know that it's, you know, I for me, with my mom, oh, my gosh, she moved to Florida. She's passed away now, so I'm not going to say anything really bad about her. But she would, you know, like, comment on guys I dated in high school and what losers they were. And, you know, there was one specifically that she really disliked. And I mean, still, I'm like, we're having Thanksgiving dinner. I'm 40 years old. Can we talk about something else? I'm married. I have kids. You know, I mean, you know, it was just so funny because it was just something that she could beat up on me for, you know, and it just gets old. It really does. It gets you just get to the point where it's like, that's, you know, that I'm not that like rebellious girl anymore. You know, it's a different situation now. So, yeah, it does. I think it does get old, and I think that I think it's a common problem that families have. I hear about it with a lot of my friends too. Everybody just, you know, remembers what this person was, you know, what their very worst moment, and they don't realize how they used that moment and overcame, you know, that situation to be so much better. And, you know, and create a wonderful life. So you have a chapter in the book that's about negative speech. Why did you cover that chapter? Why did you do that chapter?
You know, I think that the old sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me, just as you were talking about. That's really not true. I remember one time I had a workshop, and I asked folks to raise their hand if, when they were a kid, they ever had a scraped knee or bumped their head, you know, had some sort of physical injury. And, of course, everybody raised their hands. And I asked how many still had, you know, physical pain from that incident. And I think maybe one person had raised their hand. But then I asked how many had been hurt by an unkind word. And everybody, of course, raises their hands. And then I said, how many still hurt from that? Everyone, including the men. Said they still had pain from it, just like, you know, you're talking about in these conversations. So I think most of us are too, you know, cowardly, and probably in a good way, to go around hitting everybody that annoys us. But most of us are pretty comfortable throwing out, you know, a negative word or, you know, or in speech. So I think stopping those negative speech patterns for hurting other people. I mean, with our thoughts, we're hurting ourselves. Our speech, we're hurting ourselves and we're hurting others. And so, or gossip. I have a big chunk of that in the book about workplace gossip, which is a real popular topic for the businesses when I, you know, consult. But yes, speech, you know, words can really hurt. And I, you know, when you were just saying your incident with your family, one of the things I think that can help turn around a situation like that is turning it into a positive. And each time a person says something negative, turn it back into a positive. They say, yeah, you know, that loser guy you dated. And you say, yeah, but look at how wonderfully I've changed my life around I have such good taste now. And, you know, I don't know if you're married or divorced or whatever. And turn it back into something positive and say, well, I'm not that person anymore. And I am so thankful, you know, for it. And every time they throw something negative out, say something, you know, positive back, like I know that my spouse is very smart. You know, because also after my sister is the dumb one, I'm the second dumbest one in my family. Doesn't matter. Graduated with honors, and, you know, people will buy my, you know, pay to listen to me. You know, my family says they pay to shut me up. You know, they make all these comments. But I just throw it right back. And I say, yeah, CB is so smart. Look, you know, pick for a wife, you know. So and then you just keep coming back with it. And then finally, if they don't get it, then you just have to say, well, you know, like you were saying, say, you know, can we just keep it on a positive note? you know, one day somebody in the family is not going to be here, and we will have missed the opportunities to say kind things to one another. And, you know, I just lost my sister-in-law a couple of months ago, and, you know, way too young, really. She had a disease. And, you know, you think to yourself, do you really want that conversation where you, you know, put down what she was wearing or some dumb thing she or he might have done to be the final words? Is this what you would like? And it's a pattern. Families have patterns. You know, my family, too. I'm going to see them this afternoon for Labor Day. So, but actually, most of the meaner ones probably won't come. But yes, it takes a brave person to take that stand. And, you know, and it's just bad habits that somebody
it's hard to call people on their stuff. You know, it's not always easy. I'm a very confrontational person. If I have a problem with somebody, they know I have a problem with them. And because I'll just tell them, I'm not going to sit there swallowing words. I don't want to hurt anyone. You know, I try very hard not to hurt anyone. I won't even honk at somebody when I'm driving, even if they almost run me off the road, because I don't want to ruin their day. You know, so I'm like, I'm sensitive to other people's feelings, but I'm also not somebody who can just like, you know, not speak my mind about something. And so it's a little bit of a complicated, you know, situation where, for me, I find myself like sometimes you're just, you get in that thing. If it's with your family or a group of friends or whatever that are always negative, you get in that mindset, you know, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're doing what they're doing and you're trying to stop yourself. But words come out before we use our brain to think about them. You know, sometimes we just say things and then we're like, oh my gosh, why did I even say that? You know, there was no need for me to say that. That was mean. You know, it wasn't important for me to say. What do you think about gossip? How do you think that plays into it?
I think gossip is the poison of a workplace. I can't even speak enough about how damaging I think that gossip is. It just can take a happy situation and turn it, you know, into really the worst toxicity. In fact, in one of the chapters, I interviewed an entrepreneur who was very strict about no gossiping in his salons. He owned a chain of beauty salons, and he gave his employees one warning, maybe two. Then they were fired. That was his stance on it, because if you let that continue, it does absolutely no good. You know, maybe it's a little titillating there for a second, but it damages careers. It damages the person who spreads those evil words. There's no good upside about gossip. And it comes, I think, from people that are feeling either jealous or inferior or afraid at the very least. But that one has been that chapter in the book, I think, has been a lot of people's favorite, especially in the workplace. And it's hard because we sort of are conditioned to gossip in a way because of the news. We want to know what, you know, Miley Cyrus is up to. We make fun of her, but when it becomes
what Miley Cyrus is up to. I don't want to know anymore.
You're better off probably not knowing.
Yeah,
but,
I'm much better
but at
off
least chances are we will never meet her and have to deal with her. But when we gossip about other people, you know, in our workplace or, you know, in our relatives, really the worst place, I think, is the workplace, because then you can ruin people's livelihoods.
Absolutely. I agree.
So, yeah.
Oh, I agree. I don't think people realize how much gossip can destroy people, because, you know, it's like a snowball, you know, rolling downhill. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and becomes very, very dangerous, you know, very, very, very bad for people. Okay. So there's an old saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. What do you think of that?
I think that it's a good way to tell somebody not to call somebody names. But you know, just like I said before, words do hurt. And they hurt a lot of times more than a physical blow. And because if you have that thought in your head that, well, you know, it's just words, it's no harm done, it's just not true. We all have those hurtful things. And they can be things that have said, and I don't think I've ever met a person yet that someone didn't say something to them in their youth, true or untrue, that still doesn't hurt them today. They remember, you know, even creative things like, I have a little bit of this too. I made sure I sent my kids to, you know, art class and music and this and that, because somewhere along the line, somebody said, you know, you're not creative. You can't paint. You can't do this. You can't do that. And not so much my parents, but different teachers. You have no talent. I had people tell me I had no talent for writing. I became a professional writer, won a lot of awards. Those things can stick with people.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it's vicious. So I just, but on the converse, a kind word, an encouraging statement, also can stay with a person and change their life. So, you know, before you say anything, take a second, a deep breath, and think, okay, what's about to come out of my mouth can serve one of two purposes, and what do I want it to be? And if we use our words are the voices of, well, I'm Buddhist, so, you know, they always say words of the Buddha. You know, what are you going to choose? Are you going to choose to gossip? Are you going to choose to say something hurtful or something encouraging and kind? It's a lot of power we have with the use of our voice, you know, so why not use it for good?
Do you find people think that it's not their fault that they're negative? Do you think that people think that they're born with a negative gene, like just that their mind just works that way, that they're just naturally negative?
I think there probably are people that think that, but I think more people think it's someone else's fault. And usually the moms get the blame. It's my mother's
fault.
Yeah,
I know. My mom.
You know, every poor mom. And then eventually we turn into our moms. We don't do something about it. But I think that someone actually being born negative, if there is such a person, like I said, like a sociopath that has, you know, some sort of mental illness, would be the exception. It's something we learned. I mean, if you listen to Wayne Dyer's story, he grew up in foster homes. You know, he just had a horrible childhood, but he turned it into something positive. He used it as a springboard, and all of us have that opportunity as well. And as long as we think, well, this is how I was born, or this is how it is, and this is how my family is, you've just handcuffed yourself to a life sentence of unhappiness.
Right.
And it's just not true. Anybody can change. Some can change more than others, and some have, I think, what they call a threshold for happiness, but everybody can improve it, everybody. And that's what you need to focus, you know, a person needs to focus.
And in the book, you actually give people, basically tips and tricks to basically get rid of, to be able to acknowledge when they're being negative and to be able to turn that, to turn it off, right?
Yes. And sometimes the tips are very, very simple tips, and they build. You know, like the first chapter, the first tips are, one, be aware of your thinking, what you're thinking and feeling and saying. And once you recognize that a lot of your thoughts are negative because somebody did some research I read in a book. This is not in my book, but I read it afterwards. 96% of our thoughts are negative. 96%.
Oh, my gosh, that's a huge number.
It's huge, but the good news is we all can improve it. And so, I mean, that is really what's key, is to, you know, t- take that and repattern it. So, you know, first step, you know, being aware of it. The second, erase and replace. You know, like when I was talking about taking something negative and turning it on its head into something more positive, like your mom says, oh, can you remember that loser you dated? And you and
right.
then you say, yeah, thank goodness I made better choices as I grew up. Or now I'm able to advise other young girls about making better choices. You know, turning it into something positive. And then the third one, which everyone can do, but I get a lot of flack for, but it really does make a difference, is just simply smiling, making a conscious effort every day to smile, especially when you don't want to. So I tell people, go in the bathroom, you know, look in the mirror and smile for one full minute. And it's funny because the irony of smiling when you don't want to usually makes you laugh. And if you can make it.
I've used that. That's one of the tricks I use for myself all the time. Is when I'm in a bad mood, or if I'm feeling myself like being, I feel like I'm drowning in other people's. You know, I have an empathic ability, and so I like if I'm around people who are being negative, all of a sudden I feel like I'm just drowning in it. I mean, it's literally like that, and I have to separate myself from the situation, and I'll do that. I'll go into the bathroom, and I'll look at myself in the mirror, and I'll be shaking my head like, oh my gosh, and then I'll smile, and then before I know it, I'm rolling on the floor laughing, you know, because I sit there and I'm like, this is ridiculous. You just gotta take that time to separate yourself from the situation. And you're right. I mean, going into the bathroom and just smiling in the mirror, you know, you can't smile and be miserable. It's impossible, you know. Your face just won't do it. Your face just won't smile. You know, if you force a smile, then it's going to, I swear, it's like some kind of endorphins get released or something when you smile, because it just does change your mood. You know,
yeah,
it absolutely does.
Yeah, I think they have discovered that is exactly right. And what's interesting, too, is that it becomes not just for yourself, but as you smile and other people see you smile, it has this positive effect. And smiling is pretty universal that, you know, wherever you go, you know, you may not speak the language, but if you smile at someone, there may be a couple cultural differences that I'm not aware of, but for the most part, people smile back. And it makes their day. In fact, somebody taught me a trick one time in traffic. I live in Arizona, and people get very bad road rage here, you know, especially as the temperatures rise. We have a lot of traffic. And I am a little bit of a timid driver. I don't like to honk my horn or anything. And I was with a friend going to a basketball game, and we needed to get in the other lane so we could, you know, be where we were, and the cars were coming, and they, you know, they get so, you know, like, oh, they're not going to let this car in, you know, they get really angry. And a friend of mine told me that I used to work with, if you look and then you smile, like you're asking kind of a permission in a way, he said, I let people in every time. And so she said that nobody would let her in. And I go, Pat, because I was a passenger, I said, let me. And I turned and I smiled, and people started letting her in. She went over from like 3-4 lanes of traffic, and you know, that smile and that kind of like, you know, will you let me in kind of thing, instead of you know, and we got there no problem. She was shocked how well that worked. So, but in every day too, just whether it's traffic or you're actually trying to do something, or just be nice. Smile. I like to smile at babies. Babies have the greatest smile. And it just makes you so. In fact, sometimes if there's no babies around, I go on YouTube and I watch some of those little laughing babies, little twins laughing, or the quadruple. It just cracks me up.
Just watching somebody giggle, you know, there's nothing funnier. There's nothing better than watching a little kid giggle. You know, it's just the cutest little thing. Well, we're going to wrap up this segment, but I want to give you a minute to be able to tell everybody where they can find your book, which is called Erase Negativity, and where they can find more information. I know you have a blog and a website, so why don't you go ahead and say whatever it is you want to say about how people can find more about you.
Okay, great. The best place is at my website, erasenegativity.com, and in there they can find out how to get a hold of me. You know, they can order a book, they can get it autographed, I can send it to them, and or I can also tell them if there's one in a bookstore nearby, or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places carry the book, and the full name is Erase Negativity and Embrace the Magic Within. And then I also have a weekly blog. In fact, I'll be posting something new here in just a few minutes, and that's erasenegativity.blogspot.com. And then I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, and everything's Erase Negativity. I wasn't very original. I wanted to keep it all the same.
Actually, I think that's great. I think keeping it simple, that makes people be able to find you without any trouble. So there's nothing wrong with that. I really appreciate your being on. It was a great show. It's a great book. I've been on your website. I watched you have that little clip from an interview you did. I watched that. It was great. So I encourage everybody listening to tune in and check out the website. Watch that little clip where you talk a lot about the book, and definitely pick up the book. Erase Negativity is just, I mean, it's we all need to do that a little bit more. So anyway, I really appreciate your being on the show, Sally, and I hope that we can have you on again sometime.
Oh, I would love that. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Sally. I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. I'm going to take a short commercial break here, and we will be back with our second guest, Rebecca Norrington. Hold on, please.
Imagine a world where bullying isn't considered a normal part of childhood.
A world where I'm not afraid to go to school.
To speak out.
To be myself.
A world where I'm not afraid to be caught alone.
Come on, punk.
We have the power to stop the bullying. Speak out.
Speak up.
Educate.
Find out what to look for and how you can make a difference at bullying.org.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up.
I shouldn't be afraid to get out of school.
To turn on my computer.
Message. A lock to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network, tune in to host Daria Ann for Right Stream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. Right Stream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann, Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
We're back. We've had a really great show so far. Well, minus the technical difficulties, of course, of the show getting disconnected. That wasn't very cool. But other than that, it's been a great show. We had Sally Marks on talking about erasing negativity. And my next guest is super high energy. I've been on her radio show, which is Reality Spirituality. It's on the OWN network, and she's such a great lady, and I want to read her bio and then bring her on the air to talk to us about basically her spiritual journey and how she got to the place she's at right now in life and in her spiritual practice. But Rebecca Norrington is first and foremost a student of the universe and its laws. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology, along with decades of education and training on topics from spirituality to human behavior. Her professional journey includes several vocations. She's a radio host, published author, speaker, spiritual teacher, and fitness instructor. In August 2011, Rebecca premiered Reality Spirituality, an online radio show that shares revolutionary tools and strategies that enable us to maintain and sustain a personal vibration of internal peace and contentment. And Rebecca focuses every day on everyday circumstances and events and how these circumstances and events align with our own personal vibration. Rebecca's Reality Spirituality audience has grown rapidly and currently has thousands of listeners around the world. She has a clear vision of hosting Reality Spirituality on the OWN network, and I was on her show. Very, very great message that she is getting out there to the world, and I'm going to get her on the line with us so that we can learn from her. Rebecca, are you there?
I am here, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I love being here with you and your audience. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I love your message that you're getting out there to people. I love your show. I listened to it myself, and I was fortunate enough to actually be a guest once too. So it was. And that was a great experience. I loved everything we talked about. Tell our listeners how your spiritual journey actually began.
Okay, of course. Yeah, of course. Let's go way, 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 way back. No. It's interesting because I like to share that I've always wanted only two things in my life. I wanted to, number one, live to my potential, whatever the heck that means. And number two, I wanted to be happy. And I really believe that whatever I ask. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay, good. I'm just making sure that you
can
get your computer.
I can hear you fine.
Okay,
perfect. We're having a bad technical day here, so if it seems like something's off, it's just I don't know what's going on with the station today, but we're having some problems. But I can hear you great.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's say there are no problems. Everything is in order. And honestly, all of these little challenges like technical difficulties are just here to give us a little bit of a lesson, if you will, or a test to where are we? Where are we? Where is our vibration? Because, listen, I've had people on my show that have disconnected, come back, disconnected like three times. But the challenge is to be okay with all of it. So I'm embracing all the technical difficulties that you're experiencing. It's all good. It's all good. But let's get back to me. So it's like I said, wanting to live to my potential, and the other thing is to be happy. And this thing about being happy, we talk about it, hey, I'm happy, I'm happy. This happiness is what I'm talking about, is an internal happiness, a happiness that comes from an internal knowing that everything that happens to me, everything, all the circumstances, all the people that come into my life, relationships that are challenging, relationships that are not so challenging, everything comes into my life for a reason, and everything comes into my life for my betterment. I know that this is what I know, that if I'm challenged, that means I'm supposed to be challenged. And that means I am supposed to, I don't like to say supposed to, but it's there for me to evolve. Every lesson, that everything that happens to me is really there for me to evolve and just to grow into this bigger entity of who I was 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And believe me, I was, if I can use this word, I was a bitch on wheels. I mean, it was either my way or the highway. I love confrontation. I love to argue. I always was right, and everyone else was wrong. My opinion was the right opinion. Your opinion didn't matter. I mean, I want to share with who I used to be. But the interesting thing is, even though I was like that, there was something missing, and I was not happy. Now, the first thing I did was, maybe if I get married, I can live happily ever after. Maybe if I take trips everywhere I want to go, you know, if I'm traveling, I like to ski. Well, I used to like to ski. And where could I ski that would really make me happy? Aspen? Oh, yes, Aspen. And then that wasn't good enough. And then going to Switzerland. And it was never, my trips never fulfilled me like I thought that they would. My marriage didn't fulfill me like I thought that it would. So my journey really started with, how can I get this feeling? How can I be happy internally? And I want to stay, I mean, I want that to be my foundation. I don't want to be moved by my circumstances. So that's how I started, just really being uncomfortable with being miserable.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense, though, you know, because I know what you're saying. It's like you feel like you feel like you're defined by this person that you were, you know. And we talked about this in the first segment a little bit too. This person that you were, and you make these changes in your life, and then, you know, you're now somebody better, but people sometimes still take you back and make think of you as that other person, and you know, you've done so much work to change yourself and to become really a better person, you know, and you're now teaching so many other people how to do the same thing. So, and like you're talking about all the technical issues, I mean, the show actually crashed earlier. It actually shut down. There was no show. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And it's so funny because I didn't get stressed out. I was just like, all right, well, that's not good. So I dial back into the show, and I'm like, okay, and I'm trying to get the guests back on and everything. And it's just like, you know what? Stuff happens. And maybe there was a perfectly good reason for that crash. Maybe it was just a technical issue that, you know, it just happened and whatever, we move on. But, you know, that could have been something 10 years ago to me, that would have been something that would have ruined my day. That means that it was not perfect. Things did not go perfectly, and if they didn't go perfectly, then that was a problem for me, you know? And now I'm just like, whatever, so the show crashed, you know? So it's funny.
You know, I was just going to piggyback on what you said, because you said you don't know why it crashed, but I know why it crashed, or at least I know what, at least I'm on the outside looking in. It's to show you, Lisa, where you are. I mean, it's you know, it's kind of like, okay, let's give you some strokes, let's give you some pats on the back. 10 years ago, you wouldn't, it would ruin your date. That would have ruined my whole. Oh my God, I know exactly what you're saying. So, for me, oh my God, just to be able, do you realize how many people that would ruin their day? So you're not in that group anymore.
Yeah, and that feels good. And you know what? You point out stuff like that all the time, and you do this on your radio show too. It's what you do. You point out the stuff that, like, I would never have thought about the fact that 10 years ago that would have been, I would have been devastated. I would have been embarrassed. It would have ruined my day. It would have ruined the rest of my weekend. You know, and now I'm just like, oh, so it's just a little bump. It's just a little bump. Who cares? You know, it's no big deal. Who cares? I'll edit it out so that the archived listeners don't hear it. And it'll be fine, you know. But it's nice to have somebody that points that out, you know, because, you know, what we were talking about earlier in the beginning of the show was this erasing the negativity in our lives. And we all focus, and it's so easy to get trapped in all the negative stuff, to get stuck in all the bad stuff. And anything good that happens, we just kind of blow through it. You know, oh, well, that's good. Like, we expect everything's supposed to be perfect all the time, and it's not supposed to be perfect all the time. We make it perfect with our attitude, you know, really. I really believe that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was being interviewed a couple weeks ago, and I was talking about stress, or maybe it wasn't. Yeah, no. Anyway, whatever it was, someone on the show was talking about stress and how, yeah, there's going to be stress, there's going to be bumps in the road, but it is all about your attitude. And
yeah.
And you are wrong too. You're right too when you say people don't. We're ass backwards. Yeah, you get props. You get props for not behaving in a way that you behaved 10 years ago. Not only that, a year ago. And so what you're doing, and I'm telling you and the audience that we all grow, but it's a decision to grow. We make a choice to grow. And that is success to me. My new definition of success is to be at peace with everything that happens, and then to be at peace with everything that doesn't happen. And so this world, it's all about this. This is the secret. This is the real secret. And the secret is, drum roll, please. The secret is, I don't have any sound effects, so it's just me. The secret is to not resist anything. No resisting reality. No resisting what is. No resisting what is happening, what people are saying. No resisting. And you realize how nobody even talks about that. And I can't say nobody because our people are talking about it. But I mean in the mainstream, not resisting as opposed to fighting and struggling and arguing and my opinion and your, you know, oh, I was from that world. And
yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's I love that there are so many people that are starting to shift and to think a little differently. And that's part of what I want to do is like try to make it contagious, you know, so that people just, you know, people are just more and more thinking positively and accepting, you know, and living in the moment and accepting the moment for what it is and, you know, living in the past, living in the future, all the depression and anxiety and all the craziness, you know, it's just, that's not what it's about. Tell me what your life mission is. What do you feel like your life mission is now?
Ooh, good question. My mission, my agenda, And it's a challenge to me every day. But I want to be a living example, a human example, a physical example. I want to be a physical example of the universe. I want to be the one. I want to be unconditional with my love and with my acceptance. I want to be a human universe. I want to be the example of what the universe is. I mean, in all of its greatness, which means number one, accepting everything. Number two, not resisting. Number three, everything is in perfect order, not getting in anyone else's business. You know, the universe doesn't really get in our business. It lets us do whatever the hell we want to do. They're just there when we turn to them, and, you know, it's like when you open the door, you can walk through. So they're, you know, waiting very patiently, which is another thing. I want to be so patient that I can listen to people go on and on and on and on and on and on about a subject that I already know and just, and listen to them with love as opposed to listen to them with irritation. So I want
right.
to be an example of the universe. That's my mission.
But okay, so and that's beautiful. But you have to still have moments. Do you still have moments?
Hell,
I knew you'd say that.
Hell yeah, I have moments. Oh, listen, I had a moment this morning. I had a moment a couple of days ago. But see, this is the thing. I'm becoming more comfortable with my uncomfortable moments.
Right, right. That makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. Completely makes sense.
And being okay with my uncomfortable moments, because this plan, why I'm here at this particular time, is so perfect. But I always want to stick my two cents in. Hey universe, don't you think it should go like this? Hey universe, wouldn't this be easier for me? Isn't this better for me, universe? Isn't it? And they always, you know, let me do whatever I want to do, and then, you know, I always have to come back, and this is the operative word, which is surrender.
Yeah. Nobody likes that word.
I can share what happened to me this morning, if you'd like me to share a personal story.
Absolutely. Tell us your challenging moment this morning.
Okay, good. This financial thing has always been, it's not always been, but it is a little issue with me, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, and, you know, sometimes it's better and sometimes it's not, and I am not complaining because I have a beautiful home that I live in, and I, you know, I have a car that doesn't have any air conditioning or in a heat wave, but, I mean, if I really look at what I have as opposed to what I don't have, but let me tell you what happened. So I bought some property as an investment. And I'm just going to be honest, the property is in a cemetery lot. And I bought this property at the advice of a friend of mine. And she was saying, you know, you purchased this, and then, you know, this, because the property is really on a high end. And then you wait a few years, you wait about 8 years or so, and it's going to go up in value, and you'll be able to sell these cemetery lots. I mean, it sounds crazy, but sell these cemetery lots for, you know, double what you paid. And I'm like, okay, that sounds good for me. Well, last year I decided to sell. I've had them since 2006. I decided to sell.
Okay.
And for a whole year, they did not sell. They're not selling. Bottom line is this. I actually called, you know, wrote letters to the company, because that's what I do. If things don't go my way, you're going to get a letter from me. In other words, I'm a fighter, especially if I feel something isn't quote unquote just or fair.
Yeah.
And so I've been writing letters and I've actually been involved in, you know, something isn't right. You know, okay, small claims court, here I come. And I just got the letter today. I mean, I didn't go to the mailbox yesterday, so I opened the letter, and the cemetery company did not like my letter saying that, hey, I want all of my money back. You know, this is really a scam, and you're selling to people, and you're scamming them as, you know, thinking that they're going to raise in value, and it's really not. So I wrote that letter, and now their attorney writes me a letter back. And they said, we're making an offer to you, and you either take it or leave it. Mm-hmm. And the offer is $20,000 less than what I paid in 2006. So that was just this morning, and now I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I don't have $20,000 to give up and to lose, quote, unquote,
right,
to lose. And so then the universe has been working with me on this, number one. You don't lose anything. That's your concept. That's your perspective of losing something. You're not losing anything. But my old nature is to fight and send them another letter. Okay, now we're going to court. And the universe says, stop fighting, because I have to say I've been a fighter all my life. And they said, stop fighting and accept what they're offering you. But it's $20,000. Stop fighting. Now, I still don't know what I'm going to do, but that's my story from this morning.
That's but $20,000, most of us don't have $20,000 to lose. And it's, you know, money stuff is one of those things that it's really hard to stay positive when it's money stuff. You know, it's really hard to, this is one of the things I think is the biggest challenge that we have with our negative thought patterns and with our, you know, trying to stay in the moment and all of that kind of thing, money. How we're going to pay the bills, how we're going to make ends meet. And I always tell people, you know, somehow doesn't it always work out? We don't really know how, but it somehow always works out okay, you know. But I think money is one of the most stressful things. I think it ruins relationships, marriages. I think it completely ruins our peace of mind. But it's there's no way to get rid of it. I mean, it's too important, obviously. I mean, it kind of is what makes the world go round, unfortunately. I think it's a challenge. I mean, I find it to be a challenge to live in the moment when you have money stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, well, right. And yes, you're right. But then there's one of the things that I've learned as far as being in the moment and having these money issues, because I really do think that the universe is picking on me. But they need to pick on me. Yeah, but they need to pick on me because this, when you were talking, this is what I felt. This is what they were saying to me. I'm making a statement, I'm totally down with everything that you said, making a statement that money is important and money, you know, makes the world go round. And is that statement really true? You know, I'm going back to, you know, what's true, our thoughts. If there is, you know, I've said it before, if there's a baby outside in the backyard and he's in his playpen and he's 3 years old and he's, you know, when he's playing and how his house is burning down and his parents are running out and the car is stolen, a baby keeps playing in their playpen, they could care less. And the baby could care less about money. So all of these right. thoughts about money have been conditioned because is it true that money ruins the moment and will ruin a good day? Well, I will agree with you, yes, today, but I really want to change my perspective because there are people in this world, third world countries or wherever they are, that money is not an issue. The money, you know, people that are living in the islands and the, you know, really, really people that are living in the forest and in the desert and the, I don't even know where they're living, but money is not their thing. Their thing is, are they going to be able to catch fish that day?
Right.
So it's really not a true state. I understand what you're saying, but I'm working through this, you know, as we are talking on the air. This is like real
right.
reality, spirituality.
Right.
So I really want to work through that to change my perspective that it's not an issue, and the universe really – really screwed with me a couple months ago because I talked to him about this money thing a lot, and I said, you know, you say I'm abundant, but where the hell, you know, where's the money in my bank account? And the universe
right.
told me, they said, well, you have to believe and you have to feel abundant without the evidence of it, without the physical evidence of it. I'm like, what?
How do you do that?
Well, I'm still evolving with this, Lisa. I mean, I'm still trying
right.
to evolve, but I totally get what you're saying, and I agree with you. I just want to feel different about it, and I know that if I don't feel good about something, if I change my perspective and really recognize, is that really a true statement, and is that something that I was conditioned to believe, then I know that I need to work on that, and let's get rid of that crap.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I know that you talk, I've heard you talk a lot on your show and your work about your personal vibration. What is that? What exactly is a personal vibration? I mean, I'm assuming we each have our own personal vibration, but what does that actually mean?
Okay. Good question.
Changing subjects. We're going away from money now.
Yeah, good. I like it. we're all energy, and on energy has its own frequency and its own vibration that can be measured. So everything that you see, everything that you can touch is energy, including us. We are all energy, and this personal vibration is personal to us. What I like to say is it's a temperature gauge. It is our own personal temperature gauge. And you can feel the difference, Lisa. You can feel the difference when you're feeling really good and embracing the day and loving the moment and loving life and being grateful, as opposed to maybe worrying about something or sad or, you know, going back to money, worrying about money. There's a difference in your feeling. So that different feeling, it's like going to the radio, and tuning your wanting to hear something on the radio. Well, you're not going to hear country music if you tune into a classical station. So our own vibration is, what are we vibrating in the moment? Are we at peace? Are we worried? Are we content? Are we sad? Are we resentful? Are we irritated? Are we happy? We all have that moment, and we actually have the power to tune into whatever channel that we want if we really, really want it. So my personal vibration, I can feel when I'm connected to the universe, and I can feel when I'm disconnected, like I did this morning when I got that letter that I read and blah, 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 blah.
And your head exploded. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
That's what happens. That's what happens to me. I'm like, I get something. I hate getting the mail anymore. You know, you go out to the mail and you're like, oh, what's it going to be today? It's like you have to prepare yourself to get the mail. You know, like, okay, I'm going to shield myself now because I have to go to the mailbox.
Yeah.
It's at the end of my driveway, and I've got to shield myself to get to my driveway. You know, it's craziness. But yeah, I get what you're saying. It's an interesting thing. But I think I love the personal vibration thing, because you're right. We all kind of radiate at our own place. You know, we're all kind of at our own level. You know, and we can. Do you think you can feel like other people's personal vibrations, or do you think that? Because I think I can. You can kind of tell, like you can kind of sense other people's vibrations. You think that's true?
Yes, I do believe that's true. And especially if you're really tuned into it, especially if you I do believe it. And a lot of times they don't even have to say anything, but definitely if they start talking, of course, you know, if you're complaining or you're blaming or you're angry or you're irritated, you can definitely tell. But the crazy thing is the law of attraction will bring you exactly what you're vibrating. So if you're angry, then believe me, you're going to get more things to be angry about. And if you're sad, you're going to get more things. That's why it's so important to be in tune with your vibration, and that's why it's so important to do the personal work, because, I mean, I don't want anything. I gotta lighten up my vibration and elevate it as high as I can. I mean, and it's all about making choices in the moment. In the moment, each moment is a choice. So you going out to the mailbox, I understand, because the same thing with me. I haven't gone to the mailbox. I knew I was getting this letter. I haven't gone to the mailbox in two days.
You just avoid it. You just, like, put it off. I'll deal with it later.
Did that explain the personal vibration?
I think it's absolutely perfect. I think that exactly explains it. And you know, all the stuff that you do, all the work that you do, and the changes that you've made in your life, because you really did. I mean, coming from where you say you were however many years ago, where, you know, you were basically, you know, stressed to the nines, and you were confrontational.
Miserable.
Yeah,
miserable.
And basically all those things make you miserable, right? Was there a certain person or you know, like a certain influence, somebody that you read, like somebody that you started following that really helped you?
Okay. Yes. I've always been this seeker, you know, wanting to find out more information, just and finding out information because I needed answers. I needed answers why things were not making me happy. I needed answers. So when I really got to the point, I think I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and now I'm starting to look for books. And my first book that I read that was it really just started me was it was called A Road Less Traveled.
I've read it. Yes, that's a great book. Yes, I've also read that.
Yeah, Road Less Traveled, and it's interesting because it starts first sentence says life is hard.
Yeah.
And then I was like, now you tell me. Right, but even now I have to say that life is not hard. Life is now I can react to it to make it hard, but life is whatever you believe it's going to be. But the other foundations that I love, and this is one of my biggest foundations, is Ernest Holmes, and it's called the Science of Mind. And Living the Science of Mind. And he was around in the 60s. And, you know, just the same type of thing that I share on my show, same strategy, same ideas. You know, this is what we're talking about today. There's nothing new under the sun. But he started in the 60s. And are you familiar with Abraham Hicks?
Yes. Yep, absolutely.
Yes. Oh, well, I went to their seminar for the first time about a month ago, and I met Esther in person and Abraham in person. So they're a big influence. Deepak Chopra, I love what he writes.
Yep.
And it's interesting too, but you're talking about work, putting work in. Some of the writers that I have read, sometimes they're not getting their personal work in. And Eckhart Tolle, who else? But really, my foundation, I have to say, is Ernest Holmes, and of course, Abraham. Listen, there's so many things. And then there is a person that I met. I call him my soulmate, and I met him probably 15 years ago. And you just asked the question about energy. He can read people's energy without them even talking. And his first words to me when he met me, 16, 17 years ago was, I looked in your eyes and all I saw was drama. And
wow.
He said, and they just stopped me because.
Boy, the statement, yeah.
Yeah, well, I love the truth, though. I mean, tell me the truth. I want to know the truth. And the thing of it is, he says, you're raising a son, and my son was probably 12 at the time. And he said, you need to do something about this. He says, because your son is only going to be as good as you are. And there's so that's really my big motivation because, like I said before, I want to be the example to my son as opposed to telling him. I want to be the example.
Yeah, and when you think about how, you spent the first however many years of your life being negative and being, stressed out all the time and miserable, as you stated, did you feel like your son was going to inherit that or just pick that up from you or something? You know what I mean? Like, I always think, I actually even wrote an article on choosing to be happy because I think it's an actual choice that we make. And in the article, I talk about that. Some people do just seem to have that thing where they're born like positive and happy, and they're just like that from the word go, and everything just rolls off of them. But I think they're so rare. I don't feel like it's the norm. It's more, it's kind of more the exception, than the rule.
Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, so I think that, did you worry that your son was going to either inherit it from you? I mean, how about your parents? How were your parents? Were your parents positive people or negative people?
Hell no. My parents are the most negative, critical, angry people that you ever want to meet.
so that's what I'm saying. So it says, whether it's inherited like as a genetic thing or whether it's inherited as a learned behavior, I think we do pass that on to our kids, and it's so important for us to change it no matter how old you are, because even if you're 80 and your kids are in their, 50s, it doesn't really matter. You can still change the way they think with changing the way you think, you know, and the way you talk.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, they learn by example. But it's what a great question. My son, honestly, I was so into my way was the best way. I thought if he was just like me, there wouldn't be a problem. I mean, it's
really perfect.
Yes, I'm perfect, and everything I do was perfect, and everything I thought was perfect. And I was actually surprised when people didn't think the same way. I mean, I was actually surprised.
Yeah. I know that's actually true because I think that we've all gone through stages like that in our life, and you're just like, you know, and people are like, I don't agree, and you're like, well, then you're an idiot, you got to be crazy. What do you mean? What are you talking about? Of course I'm right. I'm always right.
Oh my God. That's so funny. And my father used, and then I got that from my father. My father used to tell this joke. He would say, you know, I'm always right, and I thought I was wrong once, but I found out I was right.
I love that. That's hysterical. It's just, you know, and it's just like, I mean, it's great, you know, being positive and being, you know, but the problem is if you're really being critical of everybody else who has a different opinion of you or has a different opinion than you, you know, so it's kind of a weird thing. But, you know, the world's a pretty, people say the world's like got some really big issues, and we know that. I mean, not just as what we're doing to our environment and, you know, the environment, things like that. But, you know, from your perspective, what do you think's wrong with the world? Where to begin, right? Where to begin?
Oh, no. That's actually a trick question.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
I'm ready. You're not going to tell me nothing's wrong. You're going to tell me nothing's wrong with the world, aren't you?
Yes. How did you know that?
I just know. See, I've been listening to you long enough that I now know what you're going to say before you say it.
Oh, my God, no. Oh, my God. But I spent so many years thinking there were so many things wrong with this world, so many things wrong with this country, so many things wrong with everything. Oh, my God. I spent so many years decades thinking like that.
Right.
And how can anything be wrong when everything is in order? How can anything be wrong? So I don't think it sounds crazy because the things that really, really used to just make me just go crazy was any kind of harm to children, I remember confronting mothers on the street if they yelled at their child. I mean, I was ready to take their child from them and you know, what's wrong with you? Oh, and I hated with a passion any man that would, you know, abuse a child. I just, So listen, so I go to this thing and go to this Abraham seminar, and I'm just going to tie all this in. And Abraham is saying that, you know, you watch these animal channels, and Abraham actually said that, you know, there are animals that get eaten by other animals, of course. And I watch, you know, the Nature Channel, the National Geographic Channel, and sometimes I can't watch. I can't watch an animal getting chewed up by another animal.
Oh,
I can't
me either. I can't do it either. Just keep that.
Yeah, but this is what Abraham said and put me in my place a month ago. He said, "Don't you realize that we have all chosen to be here? That we all choose to live out this reality. There are some animals that have chosen to get eaten by another animal. You know why? That's a question.
I don't know why.
This is from Abraham. They said that They don't mind.
They don't mind being eaten by another animal?
That's what Abraham said. They don't mind being eaten. In fact, when they signed up to come here, they don't. That's what they signed up for.
To be eaten. Interesting.
Yeah, you see, that's really hard. This different perspective, you know. I just have to kind of stretch my mind out. You know, it's really a stretch to get that. But we all do. I mean, I do believe that I chose to be here at this particular time. And I do believe that my son chose me to be his mother. I chose my parents. We all choose to come here in this physical body at this particular time. And if we do choose, we choose our circumstances.
Yeah,
and
I agree. Totally agree.
So then they don't mind being eaten. Now, I'm not saying that a child minds being, abused or molested. I don't know that. But I do know that they chose that for themselves. I wouldn't choose it, at least not, I wouldn't choose it. But I know that my way is not the only way that this universe works.
Right. Which, I mean, you know, that makes complete sense. So here's a deep question for you. What do you think, are you ready for depth? This is deep. What do you think is the greatest gift a person can give to themselves?
Where are you getting these great questions?
It's a secret. I can't tell you. It's a secret.
Great. What is the gift? Well, one of the greatest gifts that I think is to, I've actually changed that answer. It used to be, you know, being on my deathbed. I'm on my deathbed, and all I can do is smile.
Oh, yeah, I like that. That's nice.
And then my other answer is to really discover who you really are. Who are we really? To really discover that and know that we are extensions of the universe.
Right.
And if you really believe that you're an extension of this powerful energy, if you really believe that, then you're going to think differently, act differently, behave differently, and just feel differently.
Yeah. Very true. I think that's very true, and I think that it's important for, you know, for people to take that away, you know, to take that away from this show and this whole, you know, segment on happiness and being happy and finding happiness.
Well, how about this one? We are happiness. That's who we are. That is our nature. Our nature is to be happy. Our nature is to be content. And all it is just, you know, let's get all the cobwebs out. Let's get all the dust. Let's just dust ourselves off and recognize who we really are.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true because you know, I mean, like, who are we? I mean, how do we, you know, I mean, is it something like, you know, the things that we've made the biggest difference in other people's lives? Is it the things we're most proud of about our lives, about our, you know, about ourselves? How do we know, people, I get a lot of clients that come in and they're like, I feel like I'm missing something. I feel like, you know, there's something that I'm not getting, or that I'm supposed to be doing something I'm not doing, but I can't just put my finger on it. And I think that's so much about the fact that I don't think they're missing anything. I think that they're just, they're not seeing something that's right there. You know, a lot of times, and sometimes just some talk and, you know, figuring it out makes a difference. You know, when are you most happy? When were you most proud of yourself? You know, those kind of things. Do you think that plays a part in it at all?
Good question. Well, let me go back to the Wizard of Oz. And Dorothy didn't realize who she was, and she didn't realize that she had all the power until at the end when Glenda told her, hey, you already have this power. So when you feel, let me just say for me, when I feel like there's something missing, then I'm thinking that I'm not believing in my own greatness. And let me just go back to just talking about all of my struggles, every single one of my struggles, every one of them has always been in an inside job.
Yeah. I like the way you say that, because that's perfect. It's an inside job. Yeah, you created it.
Yeah, it's an inside job. And so it's an inside job. But so why am I outside working on the car? It's an inside
right.
job. And just like you said earlier in the show, how you're different than you were 10 years ago, I know that you can give me other examples of how you're different than a year ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a year ago, 6 months ago, even a week ago. And so that is, our focus is on, you know, sometimes when people focus on outside, but just that difference that you are a year ago, 6 months ago, that's all internal.
Yeah.
And so when you focus on the internal, then there's nothing that you need to do, or there's nothing there's nothing that's out there that you need to accomplish, or it's the accomplishment is from within. And then when you really start working on the inside, automatically everything on the outside. Now, I'm not saying everything runs smoothly, but everything on the outside it has a different feel to you. It feels different because it's outside. It's outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say, like, I always think of myself as a work in progress, but I'm perfect the way I am right now. You know, and it's like you kind of feel like you're contradicting yourself with saying something like that. But I'm like, right now, I'm perfect. I'm perfect. I'm happy with who I am, but I'm still a work in progress. You know what I mean? So it's like there's every year you can look back and say, hey, I've grown, I've changed, I've made changes to my life, and I'm a better person. I'm a happier person. I'm a more giving person. I'm a more forgiving person. You know, whatever you can make positive changes and keep going forward. And you know, well, we could talk about this for days, I swear, but it's just.
But you know what, Lisa? See, that is the beauty. What you just said is so important. It's so important, just what you said. Whew. I'm just closing my eyes and breathing it in because it was so perfect. How many people do you know that can say, you know what, I'm more forgiving today?
I call myself a teacher of forgiveness. I'm a big believer in forgiveness, and I try to get people to practice forgiveness as for selfish reasons, you know, for their own sake, constantly. And I've got to say, it's probably in my practice the most. The thing that I see people getting stuck on more than anything, and the reason that they're unhappy, if they're unhappy, a lot of times it's because of that, because of the fact that they are holding on to some sort of unforgiveness and not practicing forgiveness. I think it's huge. I think it's just so important.
It is, and in fact, in the book that I contributed to, I think we talked about it, is I wrote a whole chapter on forgiveness, or a whole topic on forgiveness. And if people really knew how poisonous unforgiveness, I like to say, I said, you know, it's like drinking a cup of poison every single day. Not drinking a cup. Having an IV IV connected internally. You're just getting drips and drips of poison and poison and poison to your own soul, to your own life, every single day. And why would you do that to yourself? Forgiving is not about the other person. Forgiving is for you. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and that is hard to get, because we think that because we can't forgive that we're hurting the other person, and it is just wrong. My ex-husband, his father died a couple months ago, and I actually saw him the day before he died. And, you know, I have a lot of issues with my ex-husband's family. And, of course, it's all been resolved, and, you know, we're except for the one sister. So do you know that the one sister told my ex-husband to tell me I was not welcome at the service?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is she thinks she's doing something to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, she's hurting. She's just holding on to that kind of stuff is just, it's going to make you sick. That's my big thing. It's going to make you sick. You're not hurting anybody but yourself. You're going to become sick because you are holding on to that anger and that unforgiveness and that and staying in that icky, dark place by not letting things go. It's just so clear to me, and something that I don't think I will ever be able to talk enough about. And I'm not saying, and I wrote a chapter on my book about forgiveness as well. And I said, I'm not saying don't lick your wounds. I'm not saying don't be pissed off. Be pissed off. Lick your wounds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Do what you got to do. Be angry. Experience whatever the emotion is that you're going through. But for God's sakes, you know, let it go. You know, and that's all forgiveness is. It's just letting it go. Just letting it go, releasing it. Okay? It doesn't matter. It's not going to define another moment of my life. You're an ass. I'm sorry you're an ass. and I'm not letting you ruin my life, you know. So
no.
I think that's really important. And we're going to run out of time here in a minute, so I want to make sure I give you plenty of time to not only talk about your show, but everything else. I know that you contributed to a book. I know that you've got a lot of other things going on. So take a few minutes to tell everybody about what's coming up for you and how people can get a hold of you.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, first of all, I just love talking to you. I just feel so connected. We are on the same page with all of it. It's just really, really nice, and it's easy to find. I use the term compatible energy.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Yeah, I love it. And so you can find me at my website is www.RebeccaNorrington, spelled R-E-B-E-C-C-A. NORRINGTON.com, RebeccaNorrington.com. And if you'd like to email me, you can just email me at info@RebeccaNorrington.com. And if you want to get, I have a free newsletter every month. You can just send me an email at info@RebeccaNorrington.com, and you can get a copy of the newsletter. Also, my blog is RLNblog.com. My last article was Follow the Rules or Else. No, Follow My Rules or Else. So I did a little bit of you know, talking about myself. I love to use myself as an example because, believe me, I was exactly where I should have been a few years ago, but it feels
right.
So uncomfortable to be back there again. You can follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. And that is... Oh, Reality Spirituality has a Facebook page, so you can go to Facebook. And Reality Spirituality is heard every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So you just go to www.realityspirituality.com, and you can find me there.
Excellent, excellent. I love your show. I have listened many times as well as been on it, but it's I want everybody to listen. It's such a high energy show. You're so much fun to talk to, and it's just a really good. You've got a great message, and I love how you're getting it out there because you're doing it real, and that's what I like. You know, I like real. I like real people who admit that they were not always perfect and are still not perfect, but are trying, you know, and that's all that matters.
I love that. And I'd like to have you on again, too. So let's make that happen
absolutely.
Before the end of the year. Yeah, before the
absolutely.
End of the year.
Love to be on. Love to be on again. Thanks so much, Rebecca, for being on the show and taking the time to talk to us. And I'm glad everything seemed to go smoothly. We didn't have any more huge technical problems. So that's a good thing. And
yay.
I will definitely be in touch with you soon. So, you know, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you. You too, Lisa. Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rebecca. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That's the end of Just Believe for this week. And I want to thank my incredible guests, Sally Marks and Rebecca Norrington for a great show on how to be happy and erasing negativity and all of that kind of thing. So every week, the show Just Believe is on the Right Stream Network at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And every week we have one or two great guests. And you can find information about my show and about me on my website, which is www.lisatarvis.com. And you'll find links to my Twitter page, Facebook page, LinkedIn pages, all of those things, and links to where you can buy my book, Just Believe, on Amazon, Balboa, you know, all the places you buy books. Until next week, everybody, have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy, be safe, enjoy your Labor Day, and if you're in the U.S. or enjoy your Labor Day and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks again for listening. Bye now.